now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello, a very warm welcome. I'm Andy Shilton.
I'm Steffi Barnett, and a very warm welcome to Shout Out.
Today on the show, Ascension.
I talked to Dan Hazelwood about this true story.
And The Little Death.
We'll be hearing from the writer Mina and Justin about this fabulously camp cabaret.
All that and a lot more campness right here today on Shout Out.
Came in two very, very different tones. You're not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
No, you're not wrong.
What with the whole
welcome
to campness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Out of 10, how camp would you say you were?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know. It depends how many drinks I've had, if you want to know the honest truth.
Does your campness level increase?
Yeah, very much
so.
A lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, I will openly admit, when I was like 18, 19, 20, I was a camp little twink. I really was. You know, I've kind of grown out of it over the years.
Well,
Steph's looking at me like she doesn't believe me at all.
Sorry,
I just can't imagine you being the twink.
Oh, thanks.
We were all young once.
I had hair
it's
once.
True.
Yeah. Steffi Barnett.
That's true.
Yeah.
I made a big mistake about reading the script at the start. I put my reading glasses on and expanded the script at the same time.
Oh.
It was humongous.
These problems you get as you get older, you know.
It's very true. Yeah.
Well, Steffi is a lot older.
Wow.
Good
at
job
least
I'm
I get
one
free space
away.
For me Zimmer frame.
And a bus pass.
I haven't got that yet.
That's a year late,
in
isn't
denial.
It? I could have gone out at 70.
60?
No, oh, 60. It's as soon as you get your pension.
Oh, right. Oh.
Yeah.
You're years behind then.
Yeah.
So 6 years.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
You better get onto them.
Yeah.
I can't imagine you on a bus, to be fair. You love driving far too much.
Yeah.
True.
You wouldn't be in charge.
Yeah.
She'd want to be in charge on the
well,
bus.
Well, yeah, I want to learn to drive, but I don't know how much I'll be driving when I learn to drive, because Steph will still drive me everywhere. Isn't that true?
Are you in the back seat?
Oh, no.
No?
No.
Pretend you're a princess.
More than it, I can just
Yeah, pretending I'm in an Uber, but I don't pay, just run.
Oh, you pay.
Yeah, it's true. That was extremely, what's the word? Devious sounding.
Yes. Risque.
And that.
Risque. Yeah. Yeah.
How are you all doing? You all seem in a very good mood tonight.
Which is ironic, considering it's actually tipping it down outside.
It's tipping down.
Well, the attacks from the far right didn't happen yesterday,
no.
So it was all good.
I think that's
good.
Lifted.
Well everyone. Done, Bristol.
Yeah,
won an award
it
as well.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, it's been named the kindest city in the UK. That is an accolade at the movement. Ah!
Scratch
did she zoom in again?
Ah. That's a very interesting company. Movement. Hello, I work for.
My arthritic finger
I reckon
twitched.
That's how the Conservatives feel. They just repress it.
I'm a candidate for the
My arthritic finger twitched and it slid across to the next news item.
I dare to think what it
so
was.
It was the Movement for Good Awards, which is run by the Benefact Group. And they give donations away based on nominations from the public.
Yeah. Apparently we got the highest number of, how do you say it, philanthropists.
We
people
do
who donate and do charity.
Wow. Yeah, we do. So
and
they
like,
say.
Yeah. I think it said in the article. I skipped Reddit because I saw it just before the show. But I thought yesterday was absolutely lovely. There were some really nice stories. Like, I haven't had it confirmed, but I believe a certain glazing company went round and boarded up all of Old Market for free. And they just said, do you want us to put it up? I saw them with their van this morning going around taking it all back down.
Yeah, you wouldn't know, would you?
No.
I mean, the day before you see film of it all being boarded up, every gay bar and restaurant boards up. And today you wouldn't know.
Yeah, I don't know what you thought. And I saw it, I was like, it's really sad to see we have to do that in a modern society.
It
but then the fact that was it 3,000 people turned
2,000,
up?
Yeah.
Huge.
And it
huge.
Kept them all away. And the police even thanked all the anti-protesters for being so peaceful.
Yeah.
And apparently someone went and got a like a big sound system, and they had a party for a few hours as well towards the end.
And Old Castle Green on their Instagram is probably still there. They did quite a lot of videos showing the whole process of putting up the the wood. What's it called?
The boarding.
And how the evening sort of turned out, and then taking them down. So it was a huge effort for all of those businesses as well, because they all contributed to helping, like manual labour.
Well, what's so sad about it is they all lost a lot of money because they weren't open. You know, so I mean, one thing I'd say to all of you listening is go support them and put a few quid behind their bars.
That's what we're doing tonight.
Same with throughout the country.
Because
the right only turned up in one place, I think.
I think that's actually a really, really important thing to mention is make sure more than ever, if you can, to go to the more independent places, the small pubs, the queer pubs, the smaller restaurants, you know, not chains, and really support these people that are probably being very impacted.
Well, there's a lot of them in that market, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, like Old Castle Green, the Bear Bar,
absolutely,
the Ill Reputes,
there's a lot of hairdressers
Market
as well,
Tavern. They're all independent, so
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But yes, it was an incredible show of love.
It was.
Yeah.
It was very nice to see.
Anyway, I've got a couple of things for you in the show. Ascension.
Yeah, what an interesting story that is about the island. So I think it's 1,400 miles west of Niger, and it's 1,000 miles east of the Brazilian coast. So it's in the middle of nowhere. It's just a volcanic cinder. And it's now a huge RAF and USAF base, and we used it during the Falkland War to good effect.
All right.
Before all that, and before it was planted out, because there's lots of trees there now, but it wasn't in the time that this gentleman was marooned on this island, because he was found guilty of sodomy.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, have a listen to this.
Dan Hazelwood adapts the haunting diary entries of 18th century sailor Leendert Hassenbosch for the stage marooned on Ascension Island for the crime of sodomy. Lee must tame the island's unforgiving terrain along with the demons that followed him ashore. As the odds of his survival steadily decline, he struggles to find a balance between his faith and his romantic desires, all the while spiraling into recklessness and desperation. Using Lee's diary as a guide, Ascension tells a heartrending story of queer identity from centuries ago that can be felt just as keenly today. And Dan joins us today. What made you choose that story?
So I originally found out about this story on a late night Wikipedia deep dive of a list of all castaways that have a Wikipedia page, and I was scrolling through them, and I found the story of this man Leendert, who was marooned on Ascension Island for sodomy, and I just became quite like fascinated by his story, why he was left there, and it wasn't long after that I bought a copy of his diaries. So there's multiple translations of the diaries. They're originally in Dutch and they're translated to English. And there's been people over the years who have kind of looked into his story more. It wasn't until the 80s or the 90s that one particular person who was interested tried to find out who this castaway was. Originally, it was just a queer castaway on Ascension Island. This person did a lot of research, found out about Lee and his life and his backstory. So that was about 5 years ago, and since then I've just been really interested in his story, and feel an unusual kind of like kinship with him. That kind of, you know, if you were alive today, would your life have been better?
Now, listeners who don't know anything about Ascension or where it is, it's in the middle of the South Atlantic. If you're in Gabon or Nigeria and you sail west, you'll hit it after about 1,400 miles. And if you're coming from the east coast of Brazil, you'll hit it after about 1,000 miles. So it's in the middle of nowhere. It's currently used mainly as an RAF and USAF base. And it was used in the Falklands. So you can imagine that being flung off on this, what they call a cinder, as it is volcanic, was quite traumatic for this poor chap. Although there is some springs on the island, so he would have had water, food was quite not so forthcoming. I think some previous navies, Portuguese and Brits, had put some goats on the island. But the funny thing is that when the Brits did arrive, they found Tent and his belongings, but not him.
Yes, yeah, he wasn't there. There was no kind of skeleton or any remains. There's no predators on the island. So, it's kind of, who knows what happened to him. You know, it is most likely that he died on the island because he was there for 5.5 months. He couldn't find in the diary entries that we have either of the two natural water sources that are on the island. He tried his best to survive. He survived by eating turtles, which Ascension is a breeding area, an egg-laying area for turtles. He lived on birds that were not afraid of humans because it was an uninhabited island. Originally, because they were sailing from Cape Town back to Holland, and there was an option to maroon him on St. Helena, but they said, there's too many people there, it's already inhabited. So they put him on the deserted island instead. And they did say, somebody will be along, some other ship, you're not coming home with us, but somebody else might take you home. And then he spent his time looking for ships, trying to survive, and no ship came until, a few months after his death.
Was his diaries very thorough?
They are quite. I mean, the versions of the diaries that we have, because the original diaries, the Dutch diaries, are lost. Nobody knows what they say. But they were, they are quite thorough. Some of the translators have kind of bunched together a few days. But in some of them, he goes quite into detail about apparitions that he saw on the island. Maybe through his thirst, he was hallucinating. He talks a lot about, it gets quite gruesome at times with his survival attempts, especially in terms of the turtles that he ate. And he had a lot of time on his hands while he was there to jot down his thoughts.
Now, you say he was Dutch, but
yes,
there were a lot of, it was quite unlucky, really, because when you look at the history of Ascension, it was used as a staging post for a lot of the European navies going backwards and forwards, and it was used as a British base to try to arrest those who were slave trading.
Yes.
From Africa over to the Caribbean. So it's ideally placed for that. And I guess it is still quite strategic as it's right in the middle. And it is weird when you look at the atlas of the world and you see this little dot that's Ascension, and there's nothing close to it, is there?
No. And when Leendert was there, it was, as you said, just volcanic. And it's only in the last 100 years, I think, they started planting trees and made kind of a new ecosystem for the island, and now it's much more lush than anything that would have been all those years ago.
One thing I found strange is that although it's in the middle of salt water and it's quite a small island, it's got this freshwater spring
called Dampier's Drip, named after a previous castaway who had found it and named it. But Lee was unlucky; he didn't find it. He found water in some ways. He chased goats, and he found pits where the goats went to. It didn't rain much. He doesn't mention rain ever happening on the island when he's there for 5.5 months. And they did put him on shore with some supplies, a cask of water. He talks in one of his diary entries about, it was so thick as I was thick with sediment and flies as I was obliged to strain it through a cloth. So it was. Everything was against him, really. The island was not giving him water or it's providing some birds and turtles, but that was about it, really.
Now, tell us where you're performing this and the timings and dates.
So we're performing it at the Bedlam Theatre, also a converted church, which lends itself very nicely to the themes of the play. We were also rehearsing in a deconsecrated church in London before coming up here. It's at 11 a.m. daily. We're not doing it on the 12th and the 19th. But otherwise, we're doing the full Edinburgh run, and we start on Wednesday. So,
okay, yeah. And you go right through to near the end of August, don't you?
Yes, yeah, yeah. We run until the 26th. So officially, we're on the 31st to the 26th.
Once you finish with Edinburgh, are you thinking about taking it on tour?
I'd love to. Yeah, I mean, I've been aware of Lee and Lee's story for so long. I'd love to, you know, take it elsewhere. Feedback that, you know, we've not started it yet, but feedback that we've had has been really good. And I'm looking forward to, you know, having audiences telling his story, but also that it's, you know, it's about Lee, but it's also about self-acceptance and about, it's a relatable queer story, the way that I'm telling it. So I am using the diaries as kind of a scaffolding of the story. And there's two chronologies running throughout. We see Lee's diary entries, and then at the same time we also have a more relatable queer self-acceptance story running throughout as well, and the struggles that people have with coming to terms with their identities. So yeah, these two chronologies kind of run concurrently next to one another. And the story actually starts at Lee's death, and it's him exploring his death, exploring the reasons for his death, while also reflecting on his diary entries and how, you know, how things could have been different if he was born in a different time.
That is a very unusual take.
It's been really fun to write it, actually, and trying to, you know, drawing parallels between diary entries of his and aspects of his life. It's still based on aspects of his life, but also with trying to find parallels between what he did actually write, or what the translations wrote, and how that can still be felt and relatable today. It's been a challenge, but I've really enjoyed the process of writing it. I'm looking forward to sharing it with people after so long.
Well, it sounds so interesting. And like you say, the history of the LGBTQ community, those standout stories are so interesting for the queer community.
So we're on Instagram. It's at @ascension_play. On Twitter, we are at @ascensionplay without an underscore. And then tickets are all through the official Edinburgh Fringe website. The Bedlam Theatre doesn't have, they can facilitate you using your own phone to buy tickets, but it's best to get tickets in advance, or I'll be outside before the show most days. so I can be there to help you along with that as well. We're also on Facebook as Ascension Play, and I'm starting to enjoy getting into the social media aspect of it, and I hope that some of you can follow me.
Yes, I'm sure they will. Dan Hazelwood, thank you for joining us on Shout Out.
Thank you so much for having me.
And break a leg.
Thank you.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
Duh. That's Bad Guy by The Unterrupters. I think I typed that wrong.
The Unterrupters?
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. Not the Interrupters.
I do try and check the names, make sure I got it right. I'll have to check I typed that right. It might be The Interrupters. I've got on the script Unterrupters.
I thought that's surely not. Unterrupters, Andy. Come on now, that was good.
So, it's a good version of that one, isn't it?
It was.
It's better than the original.
Oh.
I think. Mm-hmm. I think that's really, really
Big
good.
Billy Irish
really, really good. Really good track.
How did you find playing the trumpet when you were younger?
It made my lips hurt.
Did you like to blow your own trumpet, Andy?
I did blow my own trumpet quite a lot.
You blew, not suck, you know.
Yeah, no, it was about the fourth or fifth instrument I learned when I was a kid, the trumpet.
Didn't it tingle on the lips?
It really tingles on the lips.
You don't blow, do you, with brass instruments? You kind of like, that sort of noise. And that translates.
Thanks for that, Terry.
That translates into the noise that you get.
The only thing, and I hate to gross the listeners out, but the only thing that I used to hate was because it does collect spit inside it, and you have a little spit valve.
There's a spittle valve.
And it used to just come out in mountains of it. I know it's mine, but it was revolting.
And at that moment, we swapped to the news bulletin.
We do indeed.
No, there's an idea, a queer brass band. There we are. I just put it out there. I wonder if there is one.
I bet there is.
Right in.
Yeah
we'll have you on the show. Yeah. You can do a Christmas concert
for
us.
The QBB.
Studio at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
If
you're there.
That's it.
Anyway, should we get some news headlines?
This is Shoutout News. Welcome along.
Sky News reports that several thousand people took part in an anti-racist gathering in Bristol's multicultural and LGBTQIA+ districts of Stapleton Road and Old Market on Wednesday evening after a threatened riot by the far-right wing, stirred up by internet enablers such as billionaire Elon Musk, failed to materialise. B24 newspaper reports that fascists bolstered by tanked-up testosterone-filled young men had wanted to make Bristol's Old Market a site of their anti-social rioting. Since there are immigration and asylum support services run from the area along with the city's many LGBTQIA+ businesses, all of whom closed for the evening and boarded up their shopfronts. In the event, though, says BBC Radio Bristol, only a few fascists were sighted and corralled quickly by police. The multicultural and diverse anti-racism protest was much larger and, as you would expect, peaceful and creative. The Daily Mail says that many of the hangers-on to the recent spike in summer protests have been teenage boys looking for a fight and trouble. This should not, however, lead to complacency, said the Social Worker newspaper and the Communist Morning Star paper. Both urged the wider trade union, progressive and organised labour movements to take seriously the dangers of the far right. Pink News reports that Rainbow Migration, a charity dedicated to LGBTQ+ equality for queer migrants, along with campaign and advocacy groups, The Equality Act Review, Hope Not Hate, and the Migrants' Right Network all signed an open letter from Amnesty International and dozens of other NGOs and charities urging the Prime Minister to take seriously the rhetoric of anti-Islam, racism and extremism that is taking place online. The BBC News Channel says that the government, in its first major test since coming to power, is keen to make an example of far-right wing rioters to ensure that that social cohesion is maintained.
The British Medical Association, a professional network which represents the majority of GPs and specialist doctors in the UK, has expressed concerns about the validity of the CAS review into transgender healthcare, which many people now believe to have been a stitch-up headed by a mendacious Dr. CAS. A campaign set up by trans activists and available at the change.org petition site has asked for CAS to be stripped of titles that were bestowed upon her by the now discredited Conservative government that was wiped out in the recent general election. Members of the BMA's council recently voted in favour of a motion which asked the association to publicly critique the CAS review after doctors and academics in several countries, including the UK, voiced concern about weaknesses in the methodologies used in the review and problems arising from the implementation of some of the recommendations. A task and finish group established by the BMA's Chair of Council, Professor Philip Banfield, who will also appoint the group's chairperson, will pay particular attention to the methodology used to underpin the CAS report's recommendations. There have been ongoing discussions within the BMA about the CAS review since it was published. Before that, the BMA attended meetings with Dr. CAS when the review was being written. These, together with the Council's wishes, have helped us shape what will be a detailed, evidence-led piece of work.
The BMA is calling for a pause to the implementation of the CAS review's recommendations whilst their task and finish group carries out its work. It is expected to be completed towards the end of this year. In the meantime, the BMA believes transgender and gender diverse patients should continue to receive specialist healthcare regardless of their age. The BMA has been critical of proposals to ban the prescribing of puberty blockers to children and young people with gender dysphoria, calling instead for more research to help form a solid evidence base for children's care, not just in gender dysphoria, but more widely in paediatric treatments. Professor Banfield said, quote, "It is vitally important we take time and care to get this work right. We will work with patients to ensure the evaluation takes the old adage in medicine of no decision about me without me. It is time we truly listen to this group of important, valued and unfortunately often victimised people and to together build a system in which they are finally provided with the care they deserve." Trans groups welcome the intervention of the British Medical Association, which will bring a rigour that was lacking in the original CAS report.
And the Canary Progressive News website has described the recent jailing of activists for peaceful protest as a grotesque perversion of justice. The Canary was founded by lesbian journalist Kerry Ann Mendoza, the Rainbow Rebellion group, which is the LGBTQI plus network within the wider Extinction Rebellion movement, takes up the story and reports. The prisons are full, violent criminals are to be released early, the police are warning of a breakdown in law and order, and yet almost 200 people have been imprisoned for protesting peacefully since 2019 in this country. First, the judge gagged the protesters from speaking about the climate crisis in court. Now the protesters are getting record jail time, literally for discussing a peaceful protest on a video call. This is outrageous, and it sets a dangerous legal precedent attacking civil rights and freedoms, the very rights and freedoms that courts are supposed to protect and uphold. It's time we show up for these five non-violent protesters and others to tell the courts and legislators we will not be intimidated. Extinction Rebellion have co-organised a rally with Defend Our Juries, Just Stop Oil and Fossil Free London.
Now, Darnell L. Moore celebrates the 100th anniversary of the birth of black gay writer, civil rights campaigner and incisive political analyst James Baldwin for the online magazine Queerty. Darnell examines what Baldwin saw in international movements against oppression and reveals an intelligence that still has much relevance to say to us today. Darnell notes, for example, "It's not a stretch for me to imagine what James Baldwin might have to say about the plight of Palestinians at this moment, because he has already offered us much to consider. In his essay, Open Letter to the Born Again, which was published in The Nation magazine on September the 29th, 1979, Baldwin had this to say. This is becoming clear, he said. The Palestinians have been paying for the British colonial policy of divide and rule and Europe's guilty Christian conscience for more than 30 years. There is so much in James Baldwin's writing that can illuminate the struggles of today. Darnell's essay is a good starting point, and you can find it at queerty.com to enjoy with a cup of coffee and a commitment to learning some truths about the world in which we live.
Non-binary singer Sam Smith took part in the BBC Promenade concert on Friday, 2nd of August, as the summer season of what are popularly known as the proms kicked off live at the Royal Albert Hall and was transmitted on the BBC's Art Network Radio 3. Sam Smith was performing their debut solo album, In the Lonely Hour. 10 years on from its original release, the album's autobiographical tracks on the theme of unrequited love are reimagined with full orchestral support from the BBC Concert Orchestra. During the interval period, Linton Stevens talks to Sam Smith about performing with the BBC Concert Orchestra and was joined by drag queen and singer Davina DeCampo to discuss the links between queer pop and opera. Robert Newman founded the Proms in 1895. Since 1927, the BBC has organised and broadcast the Proms. Each season consists of concerts in the Royal Albert Hall, chamber music concerts at Cadogan Hall, or occasionally other venues. Additional Proms in the Park events across the UK on the last night of the Proms and associated educational and children's events. The season is a significant event in British culture and in classical music.
And finally, QX magazine, the guide to all things LGBTQ Plus in London reports that UK Black Pride marks its 19th anniversary on Sunday, the 11th of August. Their correspondents note, the year's theme for UK Black Pride will be freedom and justice to mark its 19th year as the UK's most inclusive Pride event. Founded in 2005, Black Pride is the largest European Pride celebration for LGBTQ plus people of African, Caribbean, Asian, Latin American and Middle Eastern descent. It is a safe space to celebrate our diverse sexualities, gender expressions, gender identities and cultures. UK Black Pride organises annual celebrations during Pride Month and various activities throughout the year, which promote and advocate for the emotional, intellectual and spiritual health and well-being of the communities they represent. So that's UK Black Pride 2024 at Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park this Sunday, the 11th of August, 12 noon to 8 p.m. To get involved or to learn more about the UK Black Pride movement, visit all the W's, ukblackpride.org.uk.
And that's it for another busy week in society and culture. Be sure to keep connected with community media through the week and for more this week for more. And why not check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr
and Ezra Peregrine.
Shoutout News,
national and international LGBT news for you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Nominated for the prestigious Mullen Lowe Nova Award in Central Saint-Martin, The Little Death is a show-stopping blend of cabaret comedy and thought-provoking storytelling with dynamic queer twist. Get ready to step inside the fabulously chaotic world of Mina, a spirited young Turkish woman on a wild quest to find the one thing missing in her life. An orgasm. I'm joined by Justin and Mina. Wow. So you're looking for an orgasm then, I guess. Okay.
Yes, I am. It's a very interesting way to introduce someone, I guess. Hello, world. I'm Mina, and I'm looking for my orgasm, is how it sounds.
Right. So you co-wrote this together. Yeah. Little Death. First to you, Mina. How did that idea come about? What because there was a story you were telling off mic that is quite funny, because you were actually on the wrong university course, weren't you?
Yes, let me tell you. So I graduated from Central St. Martin's in July 2023 from my master's in performance design and practice. And I thought I was studying set design. It's a 2-year course. And at the end of my first year, beginning of second, we were in a workshop in Italy, and I had a complete mental breakdown. I was crying to my professor. I was like, I haven't designed a single set. I'm so confused as to what's happening. And he sat me down very seriously. He goes, this is a performance art course. Like, you need to go on stage and perform to graduate. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, what do you mean? And so I delusionally was in the wrong course, even though I think every signal was clear and I should be aware.
And she comes home and goes, I'm in a performance art course. And I go, yeah, I know.
So I don't know what I was thinking, but yeah, so then basically to graduate, I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And we were in this workshop and we're just playing with materials, and there were these Victorian skirt bones, you know, those ones that are, you know, go out, and I was playing with them and I was kind of shaking them and I was making woo sounds, and I was like, oh, like that kind of looks like the shape of a vagina, and that sounds kind of like, you know, what I would sound. And then my professor was like, maybe you should do something about your dating life, because at the time it was quite active. And Justin and I have lived together for 6 years and we've known each other for a decade. We're like, we have a lot of material. And if I don't remember half of it, he remembers the other half. So that's kind of how The Little Death came to be honest with you.
Right, Justin, over to you. So I guess you got into the right course at uni. So you were heading in the correct direction, yeah? So you had all this planned.
I mean, funnily enough, I actually didn't go to Central St. Martin's. Okay. I was kind of like a little illegal extra student that just tagged along. I was in all of the critiques. In my main practice, I'm a photographer. So I was documenting all of the performances at Central St. Martin's. So it was great because I was sort of treated like one of the course mates before we even were working on a show together. And so when Mina approached her professor asking if we could work on it collaboratively, he goes, I mean, I don't see why not. Why not, really? Yeah. And so
It came to be.
I mean, it's a true level of intimacy that I don't think I've known with anybody else. And some of it I didn't ask for, but I'm looking for all of it.
I am intrigued about the searching for an orgasm. How does that fit in the play?
You know, female sexuality is very messy and complicated and vulnerable. And I think I've had a lot to navigate because I am from Turkey and there's, you know, a part of me that's Middle Eastern. And then I was raised on and off in Canada, which a part of me is very liberal in some areas. So there is this very different worlds that are combined and I feel very complicated about certain things and I get confused. And, you know, you have certain opinions on sexuality when you're growing up that it's very hard for you to unlearn, I guess. And I think I have a lot of mental blockage around certain things. And recently we're going through the script now again, and, you know, we're editing parts and I'm realizing there's a lot of things that I actually didn't even realize when we wrote the script first time around. And I'm maybe even realizing that, like, female sexuality is quite costly in a world where preferences are dominated by men. And I'm starting to recognize that. And the way it fits is, I think orgasm actually is kind of a metaphor for a lot of things. You know, for me, it's this door that's closed and I don't know what's behind it. And I think it's actually quite linked to, like, existentialism and being lonely. And, like, this orgasm to me, it's like, in search of my orgasm, I've kind of recognized how alone I am. Like, I've met a lot of people, I've been with a lot of people. And I think in the search for that, maybe I was actually searching for something to do with me and I quite lost a lot of myself. So the way it fits into the show is that it's really an emotional metaphor, even though it's an actual physical struggle. It's very all well combined, I would say. I don't know. Does that answer the question?
It does. It does. And I can see the differences, of course, by being brought up in Turkey, which is quite conservative country, and a very liberal Canada, that contradiction for you. Is your family still in Turkey?
Yes, they are. They are in Turkey. My parents are quite liberal. I mean, the show I'm doing, I have their support. I'm very lucky for it. But they are still in Turkey, yeah.
Okay. Do you miss Turkey?
Of course I do. Turkey's home.
Yeah.
I had a very hard time being happy in Canada. It was very different. It was a big culture shock for me when I lived there for a decade. And I think London is that perfect in between where it has combination of both the elements of both countries. And so I feel very much at home here, thankfully. But it's hard because Justin, I've talked about this many times and he's very supportive listening to me. Turkey's changed since I left it in the last decade. So even though I go home and I look for home, it's not exactly there either anymore. So it's like I miss it, but I'm missing something that I'm probably not going to have again, which complicates my emotions towards it.
Can you tell us a little bit about the plot without giving too much away? Because obviously we don't want to spoil it for people who are going to rock up to the theatre.
Yeah, The Little Death is a live sitcom that follows the relationship between Mina and her orgasm and the relationship of Mina and I. And so through these comedic escapades, sexual misadventures, just true chaoticness in that theater, I mean, it comes to something that has become quite camp, quite queer, very heartfelt, and it's a conversation that is, I think, really important about being open and honest and shameless about sex.
Yeah, the plot kind of follows, basically, I get diagnosed with a fictional disease called cantacamelitis, and I have 6 months to live if I don't orgasm with someone. And this urgent deadline makes me, it forces me to confront, I guess, various issues in my life. And I have to come to some eye-opening realizations. And it's all intertwined with real life experiences. And my vagina is literally its own entity in the show. Like it is a actual person who gets to be in the show with us. So yeah, it's really, it's all these, one of our friends who watched the show actually after the show came up to me and he goes, how could you laugh about this stuff? I cried. And so I guess for some it's quite sad and for some it's quite fun, but it's very unapologetic and it's eclectic. And I think that's like a general plot without giving too much away.
It sounds like you're following the sort of the well-known theatrics of men's brains being in their penis. So
fancy seeing.
Oh, well, sorry, do you fancy seeing us broadcast a live show?
Well, on the 29th of August, you can. We'll be live from the Old Castle Green for their birthday.
Join me and everyone here, Terry and Steph and Ez and Tara and hopefully
and
Laura
Shilton.
And myself and loads of others. And we'll be broadcasting right in front of you.
Not nerve-wracking enough. Next week, surprise, surprise!
From myself and the rest of the team I've already named, say bye-bye, everyone.
Ciao.
Bye-bye now, bye-bye.
Shout out. LGBT radio for you.